I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Final hour of the program, Whitey Gleason.
Yeah, and I think we have to alert everyone that we are on upset watch here. Upset watch. Halftime. From Kansas City, the Colts are leading the Chiefs 13-10. The Colts are leading the Chiefs. John Dickinson, could it happen?
It could. I would still bet against it, but it could happen. John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, final hour. We're with you until 8 here on 95.7 The Game. If you want to give us a call, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. We're talking 49ers. We're talking a little Warriors basketball.
May I throw out a question?
Sure.
888-957-9570. Little off the beaten path here, so we'll see. Or Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Right now, we got the baseball postseason on, right? Last night, you were at the basketball game. The NFL's raging on. Which was more significant to you, the first baseball game you ever went to, football game, or basketball game? When you look back, assuming you were fortunate enough, have attended, you know, all these events. Which one stands out in your mind, JD? Is it the first baseball game you ever went to, Major League? I'm assuming with you it would be baseball. Or the first NFL game or the first NBA game you ever went to?
It's probably the first basketball game.
Really?
Because that was the first game I ever went to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it would be baseball.
Well, it was actually all the same. It was all the same year. It was all 89. And so I was 8 at that point. So it was all 1989. It was January of 89. It was...
In 89, I think I turned 50.
It was a...
A little older than you.
It was a Kings-Milwaukee Bucks game.
Oh,
Sacramento,
okay.
Kings-Milwaukee Bucks game.
All right.
And the Bucks won the game. I also saw the Giants. That was the second game was the Giants. Cardinals in May of that year. And then I saw the A's play the Angels in June or July of that year.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a Dave Stewart, I think Chuck Finley game.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, at the Coliseum.
You don't forget a thing like that.
That the Angels won 4-0.
Well, that's a great point you raise. Maybe it's just a matter of whichever one of those was the first you went to.
So I think it's the basketball just because I went on and played basketball throughout high school. I played basketball longer than any other sport, and you know, I think I've probably covered more basketball than any other sport between, you know, my time in Sacramento and my time here.
I love basketball. It's almost like a religion to me, but the first NBA game I ever went to was the least memorable. It was a Saturday night game, the Warriors against the Sixers, the year after the Sixers lost 73 games, I think, and there was nobody there. And I remember it, but it was just kind of, October. But first baseball game, I think, for me, because it was Candlestick and it was full, and I think I was 4 years old. But I can still remember just the crowd and the atmosphere. My dad was a big fan. He was a Cardinal fan. I was a Cardinals, and he was so excited. And we saw Lon Simmons in the parking lot because my dad was a writer, and Lon Simmons had a Cardinal hat on, and Lon Simmons said, "You got the wrong hat on." And I said, "No, I don't." But I can remember all of that. That really stands out.
So
just, I remember the atmosphere, and it was a sunny day, a big crowd. It was great.
Giants-Cardinals.
Yeah.
And see, Giants-Cardinals was my first game as well in 89. Don Robinson hit a home run.
He was a good hitter for a pitcher.
Pitcher. And he had hit a home run and threw a complete game, like, I want to say 9-hitter, and they won 5-1.
Wow.
Yeah, they won 5-1, and... Yeah, the A's lost 4-0.
All right. Well, thanks for letting me throw that out there. I just, you know, this time of year with all the sports going on, I'm just curious about that first game at the Chase Center, of course, last night. Yesterday when I left the station and I was walking to BART, I saw, you know, a mom and a dad, and they had like five of their offspring, I can assume, or their kids and their friends. They're all wearing, you know, Warrior jerseys, and they seemed like they were just everybody. Their parents were in jerseys. They were so excited about the first game at the Chase Center.
Yeah, and it's a heck of a building. I mean, it really is incredible. We did Warriors this week. Matt Steinmetz and myself, we were out at the team shop there at Thrive City at Chase Center. And it's just, I mean, it's the most unbelievable team store I've ever been in.
Well,
I
think it's
two stories.
Yeah. Growing up in Vallejo, you know, and we take the bus to Candlestick to see the Giants. But I just think it's incredible now that we have the Giants have a beautiful ballpark. No, no, it's been around for a while, but I still think of it as the new park. And the 49ers have a new stadium. And the Warriors now with an arena in San Francisco, which they never had before. It's remarkable. Fingers crossed that the A's are able to get something done. We'll see. But it's an incredible time to be a Bay Area sports fan.
We were talking about the Warriors, Whitey. And there was something about just watching D'Angelo Russell last night.
You were talking about concerns, and I asked if you were concerned about his slow start.
And no, but the one thing that I do, you know, we've heard a lot of, oh boy, Curry and D'Angelo Russell in this backcourt, and they're going to run a lot of pick and roll, and I think they will do that. But the big thing, Curry and D'Angelo Russell is not Curry and Klay Thompson. Like,
no.
Don't think that you're going to get similar production in a different manner from those two. And
that's not a fair comparison to D'Angelo Russell, but it's a great point.
It's not, but the thing that sticks out to me is the 3-point shot, because he is a very streaky shooter. There are games just watching him where he can just look awful. Like, shots not going in, missing badly, flailing drives to the rim, wide open threes from the corner, he misses them. And the thing that I looked it up here because I wanted to make sure I had the accurate number. D'Angelo Russell's career best 3-point shooting year was last year. He shot 36.9% from 3-point range. He is a career 35.3% 3-point shooter.
So which helps you. It's not great, but it helps you.
Right. It helps you. And it's certainly better than nothing. But Klay Thompson is a 42%
oh, yeah.
3-point shooter. And he shot 40% every year of his career.
And Klay doesn't need a lot of those shots. And D'Angelo Russell, that's my biggest concern. When he was with the Nets, he was the guy. And I'm not saying he's selfish. Some guys need the ball all the time. Last year, he had the luxury of, if he was having a bad shooting night, it's okay. He was the man, and he was going to continue to get his shots. And I don't know if the Warriors will be able to allow him to continue to shoot when he's having those off-shooting nights. And I think that could be an adjustment for him.
And he's also not... He's just not a standstill shooter. Like, he's not a guy that's going to catch it and shoot it the way Klay Thompson was. I mean, that helped the Warriors' offense function. The fact that he was just a stand-up shooter.
Mm-hmm.
He would be in a spot, and you hit him, and it's going up, and he was knocking it down at a 40% clip.
That's very difficult for a lot of guys.
So it's going to be very different. And can you offset some of that? Yes, but it's going to be done in a very different way. And as good a player as D'Angelo Russell is, he's going to be a lot more inconsistent and I think a lot less efficient.
Well, one way they're going to try to deal with that, right, is they're going to have him running the second unit. So he won't always be playing with Steph. So when he's in there a lot of times with the second unit, yeah, it'll be okay. You're running the show just like you did with the Nets.
Yeah, and I think you saw some semblance in the first half of how Steve Kerr would manage his rotation along those lines last night. You want to get a call?
Yes.
Let's get to a call. Let's get to Robin. Robin in San Francisco. Hey, Robin. You're on with JD and Whitey.
Hey, how you guys? What do you do? Real fast, first of all, I just want to say, I guess I'm a little annoyed, I'm hella annoyed. First of all, I hate the Lakers. I really hate the Lakers. I'm a Northern California girl. And second, I can't stand LeBron, okay? third thing is that, you know, what the Warriors are and are not, is not, it should not be of no surprise. This is inevitable. Anybody that's a detailed basketball fan knows, knew, and should have known this was coming. That's what I want to say. And the last thing, and one more thing, LeBron was focused because he wants anybody, even though they're not the same team, these teams are going to take great pleasure and their fans are beating the Warriors, regardless if they're the same team or not. So that's a fact. Whitey, I wanted to tell you that my two things about being a sports fan. When I was a kid, my most exciting thing, believe it or not, was baseball, because we lived in Oakland at the time. 72, 73, 74 Reds, A's, they were the bomb diggity, and they used to have bat day, hot pants day. I got a Sal Bando bat. My sister got a Burt Campaneris bat. And then my second most favorable thing is the tickets that I won from 95.7 The Game to go see, I forgot what playoff game it was. It was against whoever we played, the Clippers. And I hadn't been to a basketball game since Magic Johnson and the Lakers came and used to beat up on the Warriors. You guys take care of one another.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robin.
Yeah, I don't know, Robin, if you had these, but way, 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 way back when, the A's used to give away green bats on bat day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and everyone would be pounding on the bleachers out there at the Coliseum, you know, by the seventh inning, bam, 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 bam. Yeah, some sweet green bats given away by the A's on bat day.
I actually, the first Giants game was bat day.
Oh, man, no wonder you remember that.
That first day, yeah, and I had forgotten that, and then Robin it clicked back in. But yeah, bat day, and I remember my older cousin. I was 8, but I had a cousin that was I think maybe 16 at the time, and I remember, and he was a tall 16, so and you know it was 14 and under, I believe, where the you know you get a
That's
bat
the
if you're 14
yeah.
and under, and I just remember him like, and at first they weren't going to give it to him, and he really fought hard for it.
Good for him.
He really fought hard. But I had that bat. I had that bat for years, and I remember using it, which was
because you think I got this at the Giants game. This is like a major league bat. This is the greatest bat ever.
Yeah, I wonder whatever happened to that bat. My parents may still have it, actually, believe it or not.
You know, the Giants used to have a dugout store downtown, and one of the things they do is they'd put broken bats, when players would break their bats, they'd put them in a barrel and you could go to the dugout store downtown and you could buy one. And my dad was there one time and he was looking through bats, and I was a big Darrell Evans fan for some reason. I don't remember why. My dad found one of his bats in the barrel and it wasn't broken. There was nothing wrong with it. And my dad bought it and gave it to me. And then later he was at some charity golf tournament with Darrell Evans and he told him about that. And Darrell Evans said, I remember that bat. I wondered what happened to it. Now, I don't know if that's true, but my dad and I were buying that, so.
Yeah. Let's get to Eric. Eric in San Francisco, up next here on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey,
what's up,
Eric? How are you?
Good. Talking Warriors ball. I think they're going to still be a upper-tier team, 4-5 seed. I think they can beat anybody. I don't think anybody in the West, Lakers, Clippers, Rockets, Jazz, wherever else you want to name, can will want to face the Warriors in the first round. To me, the biggest factor is Klay. We don't know how he's going to come back from that ACL injury, which is hard to tell. Some guys come back quicker. I know Bob Meyer said he expects it somewhere in February or March. But to me, if he comes back in somewhat of his, you know, I'm not going to say all-star form, but somewhere near that, I still think they can get to the NBA Finals. It's crazy. Some people, I think the Lakers are still a work in progress. We don't know how the players are going to fit, obviously, on paper. They've got talent. The same with the Clippers. But, you know, those guys got veteran guys, and those guys are injury-prone too. So I think it's wide open in the West, and everybody thinks this is doom and gloom for the Warriors. But I still think they can compete and get to the NBA Finals or even to the Western Conference Finals minimum. What do you guys think about that? Am I just off my rocker, or do you guys foresee that as well?
Thanks, Eric. It's a little strong for me, but go ahead, Whitey.
It's so hard to say because, yeah, I agree with you. I don't see the evidence to suggest as optimistic forecast as you have, Eric, but it depends so much on injuries, and that cuts both ways. What I mean is, yeah, when's Klay going to come back? We don't know. If Klay comes back in February, March, and he's Klay, well, then, yeah, I like their chances to make some noise in the playoffs. But as far as the Lakers, I mean, the Lakers have a lot of veteran players, and we know that LeBron is starting to show wear and tear. And watching last night, Avery Bradley, I think their depth is really going to be tested this year. I think there's every chance that the Lakers are going to be dealing with aches and pains all season long. That's really a veteran team, and I think that's going to be an issue for them. I know you're asking more about the Warriors, though.
Look, I think the Warriors, if they're good enough to put themselves in position to where Klay Thompson returning in March matters. Like, they have to, like, that's the part that that's the difficult part in this thing. Like, if you say Klay Thompson's going to play the last 25 games of the season, we'll pick a number. At that point, so you're talking about, 57 games in, if you're the Warriors. At that point, you know, you got to be 30-27.
Yeah.
And I do think it's legitimate to question if this team can go 30-27 playing without Klay Thompson until that point in time.
It's very concerning to me from the Warriors' standpoint that for them to do anything like what they would like to do, a lot of things have to go right. Kevon Looney, they're expecting a lot more from him. Is he capable of that? Yeah, but that's not just an automatic that he's going to be able to score more points and assume more of an offensive load. Is Willie Cauley-Stein going to help defensively? Is he going to become a more consistent defender? He's shown flashes. Is he going to be a more consistent rebounder? Well, right now we don't even know when he's going to play. So that's not to say that, Eric, you use the term gloom and doom, but there's just a lot of unknowns right now. There's an awful lot of them that they got to figure out. They've got a lot of work to do. After watching last night, I was thinking, if I was on that coaching staff, I don't know how I would have slept last night. Again, not to say we're terrible, but just, wow, we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
A lot of unknowns.
A lot of unknowns.
And Klay is one of them.
And not having Klay, how does Curry and D'Angelo Russell work?
Yeah.
How do you get any kind of production at all from a three spot? And I mentioned this yesterday on Warriors This Week. You know, I asked Steve Kerr earlier in the week, you know, can you look at the small forward position maybe like you looked at the center position in years past, you know, where you just can kind of do it by committee and you play somebody, you know, a certain amount of minutes one night versus another night because of, you know, matchups and who you think give you the best chance. And he said, oh, no, I don't look at it that way at all. And he didn't think it was the proper comparison. You need to have somebody that's just going to take the reins and take that job and play significant minutes. He said small forward's probably the most important position in the game when you look at some of the talented players that play that position all over the place. So I think that's a concern. I think the center spot is a concern. I think the one thing that I'll say, I think Warriors fans are taking for granted a little bit that this team is just going to just win games in the regular, you know, until Klay Thompson comes back. That they're just going to win enough to be a certain playoff team. Like, that's not, you can't just pencil that in. You can't
right.
just pencil any games in the way
it's
that,
not that easy.
People have gotten used to penciling wins in the last few years.
Well, let me give you a note of optimism. As I said, I think there's a lot of questions that they have to answer. But, you know, in recent years, one of the hallmarks of the Warriors championship teams has been, especially if you go back to the 2015 team, the bench has been excellent, right? They'd have guys like Barbosa, Livingston, Spates, guys that would come here and seem to play much better. Would you agree?
Yes.
And I asked Tim Roy about that once. How does that happen? Tim Roy's opinion at the time was, well, the Warriors coaching staff has a real knack for putting players in position to succeed. So they still have that. So there's every reason to think that they're going to be able to sort this out and get the best out of some of these guys. I just think they have a lot of that to figure out.
Yeah,
right now.
And look, I'm not saying they can't be good or they won't be good. It's just not a lock,
right?
Like some people think it is. And, you know, 510, Chilton Autobody text line, I thought you guys are professionals. How are you going to judge the Warriors off of one preseason? No.
That's not what we're doing. You're right. That would be silly. We're not doing that.
That's not what we're doing. And if anything, pointed out a couple of things that are semi-positives about last night's game.
Yeah, yeah.
But the outcome, whatever, but not having a three was a problem before last night's game, and not having a three is going to be a problem after last night's game.
Yeah.
Size, if Cauley-Stein and Kevon Looney in particular are out, is a concern for this team. If things go right and Curry plays well, and Draymond plays well, and it works with D'Angelo Russell, and Cauley-Stein comes back, and Kevon Looney's an improved player, and the rookies can contribute, and nobody gets hurt, then I think the Warriors can win 48 games. But all of those things have to be close to right for that to happen. Not just, well, some of them do and some of them don't. And, like, this isn't the team that we've seen the last few years.
And I'm saying I would take, if 44 gets you in, I'd take 44 playing well at the end of the year over 48 or more if they're not playing well at the end of the year,
but
heading into the postseason.
But 44 made
if,
but
that's 44's
got
to get you in.
But 44's got to be enough to get you in at that point. Yeah. And that's where I keep going back to. This is going to be about, can they win enough to make Klay Thompson's return matter? Because I don't see, if it's 20 games, you can't be 27-33. With 22 games left, right?
Not unless you...
And say, we're going to get Klay Thompson back and go on a run.
Not unless you move back to Philadelphia and they put you in the Eastern Conference, which I don't see. If, like, then you'd have a shot.
You're going to have to be 33-27
yeah.
without him.
Yeah.
Like that's not... My only point is that's not going to be easy.
Right, right. But it is a good point. You can't base anything on last night.
No, it's not based on last night at all. It's
right.
based on things that were already concerned. And again, I think if there's... It just, they're going to need to rely on, Iguodala's not there anymore.
He's not.
Livingston's not there anymore.
Nope.
You know, Klay Thompson's not going to be there. Like, if Klay Thompson was healthy right now and they
Kevin Durant's not coming through that door.
They had Klay Thompson right now, I'd say, okay, yeah, they can win 50 games. And let's see how it looks like it did, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Like, run it back before, pre-Durant. You can't do that because they don't have him. It's just not.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fascinating.
It is going to be fun, and the regular season is going to matter, and there is going to have to be an allowance for room to grow. Early in the year. Well, boy, if it doesn't look great initially, it's going to get better. To your point about development and about the coaching staff able to figure out
what fits where and who fits best with whom and when. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
That's
so
basketball.
So it's not that they can't overcome not being a good team maybe at the beginning of the year or having some, but they're going to have a lot of things fall in line, including Curry playing at an extremely high level. I mean, we were talking about this a little bit yesterday too, Whitey. Teams are going to be coming at the Warriors now. Like, look at the two guys that I think would frustrate, infuriate opponents the most, right? Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. Well, now those two players are going to have to get it done with guys coming at them without Klay Thompson and without Kevin Durant.
Yeah, it's a great point you guys made. I heard that yesterday.
Like the target is still going to be like there are players in the league that are thinking Draymond's been kicking my tail for years because he's had help. Where's the help? I'm going to kick his tail now. And the same thing for Curry. Like Curry is going to have to. I don't think Curry has anything to prove. But there are players in the league that are going to be coming at Curry saying, okay, if you think you can do what James Harden and Russell Westbrook have done.
I think there are times in Steph's career, his fabulous, fabulous career, where he has played as if he felt he had something to prove, and I don't think that's when he's at his best.
Interesting.
I feel like when he's trying to show what he can do, when he's playing, not thinking about it, I think he's better than when he has been in a position where it looks like he's trying to prove something to someone. He doesn't need to do that. Certainly not this year. It's the last thing they need.
Yeah. So it's something to keep an eye on. And look, it's a long season, but they have to make the games that Klay Thompson, when he comes back, when they're making a decision about bringing him back, they got to be in a position to already in a position to make a run. Not saying, oh, Klay Thompson is going to come back and then you're going to go on the run.
Who scares you the most in the Western Conference? What team do you think is the most legitimate contender?
It's probably the Clippers.
I was going to say,
but I don't
Clippers
love Paul
kind
George.
Of the default answer.
I would actually like the Clippers more if they had gotten Kawhi Leonard and didn't have Paul George. How about that for a hot take?
Where you're going.
I'm not a big Paul George guy. I think they've got Kawhi, and then Paul George is a.
I think the fact if they didn't have Kawhi, I don't think it would go well for him. But I think the fact that Kawhi's there is going to buffer him enough where I think he's going to have a fine year for them. That's going to be a really good team.
Are the 49ers ready for prime time? We're going to ask Cam Inman that coming up here on 95.7 The Game.
to 95.7 The Game.
Rolling along here on a Sunday night, John Dickinson and Whitey Gleason with you. Let's get out. Yeah.
Little Green Day for you. The first show they ever played was in Vallejo, California, because Billy Joe's mom worked at the Hickory Pit in Vallejo. So a little Green Day trivia for you.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's tremendous Green Day knowledge.
Thank you.
Wow. Cam Inman.
He's got a lot of knowledge.
He's got a lot of trivial knowledge. A lot of 49er minutia from Cam Inman. He joins us right now, 95.7 The Game. What's up, Cam?
It's so weird to have back-to-back Sundays relatively off where I'm not at a Niner game, and I honestly don't know how football fans get through a day where you're watching, like, at least three games, right? And this Red Zone channel really has revolutionized just NFL watching, where you just sit there and you're just, I mean, my wife's like, are you watching, like, three games at once? I'm like, more than that. I think we got six on. So it's been a day.
Yeah, it has. And what do you make? I guess we'll just start there. What do you make of just some of the outcomes today? The Bears losing to the Raiders, the Packers just basically hammering the Cowboys. I mean, what did you think of some of the action today as it pertains to the 49ers in the NFC?
Well, let's get to the Raiders first, because I watched that, because I hadn't watched a Raider game much, and I watched a lot today, and I predicted that the Raiders would win, but I wasn't very confident in it, but I said they're just going to have to take Mac out of the equation, and they did, and that's NFL. You never know, and it's a team that's kind of has found some confidence in it, which is obviously the 49ers have a lot of confidence, so the Bay Area is feeling pretty good about themselves right now. Just, you know, the Cowboys were feeling pretty good about themselves a couple weeks ago, and now not so much. I think the Saints are kind of saying, okay, they're getting by while Drew Brees is out, but I think obviously they'd want him back as much as everybody likes Teddy Bridgewater now. The NFL is really, I think parity is really alive right now. I mean, the Packers are doing well, but I don't think anybody's sold on them as the favorite in the NFC, or the Eagles walloped a Jets team that's just abysmal, so you can't read too much into that. And people don't want to read into the Niners 3-0 start because they haven't beaten any good teams, and they play who's on the schedule. So tomorrow night's game is being billed as a chance to, I guess, show the nation that they are a different franchise, that they actually have a good pass rush, that they can run the ball with anybody, and that Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy. So, I mean, we're building it up as a really big game. But the next week's game is way bigger because that's against the Rams. And then if they do okay through this stretch here, those December games are going to be way bigger than what we're going to see tomorrow night.
Cam, looking at potential NFC playoff teams, we're only five games in, obviously. Is it fair to suggest that Carolina has already turned their season around 0-2 under Cam Newton, and now with their new quarterback, they've won three in a row.
Great Kyle Allen.
Kyle Allen, yeah, they're 3-0. They've turned their whole season around, haven't they?
I wouldn't say they're totally around. I mean, they're 3-2 right now, so they're about a third of the way through, right? I do love the fact that I'm a big fan of Ron Rivera. I think he's an outstanding coach, a wonderful guy, and I think the whole Cam Newton stepping aside. Everybody on the Panthers can kind of like, you can catch your breath. And I mean, he's been really an enigma these last couple of years of just an uber-talented quarterback, but there's always some kind of weird drama surrounding him. And after he lost that last game where they failed to go for it failed to get in on fourth down when Cam could have just dove over, just weird vibes out of that. And then I think Kyle Allen obviously has given them a new just this new sense of relief, and they've been able to use Christian McCaffrey the way he's supposed to be used. And, I mean, to this day, I just don't understand why the Niners didn't draft Christian McCaffrey as the Stanford guy rather than going with Solomon Thomas, because McCaffrey is just a sensational offensive player, and that's what Kyle Shanahan thrives on. I mean, obviously they wanted to, fortify the defensive line, and they've done that this year by getting Nick Bosa and Dee Ford, and Solomon Thomas is really a bit player in it. So, long story short, I think Carolina Panthers, they could be fighting for a wild card spot along with the 49ers, the Rams, the Seahawks, whichever of those teams don't win the division. And then I think it's pretty much the Eagles and Cowboys and the Packers. That's your you're like, what, 7, 8, 9, 10 team playoff field.
Cam, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Seahawks-Rams game from Thursday night. The Seahawks win it. It seems like something weird always happens at that stadium up there, and it works out for the Seahawks. And you know, the Rams missing the kick at the end of that game. How do you think that changes the complexion of the NFC West?
Well, if you remove yourself from what actually transpired during the game, and you see what just the end result, you say, okay, that's what was supposed to happen. Seattle was supposed to hold serve at home against the Rams if they're going to be really a playoff contending team, and they're 4-1. They absolutely are right now. Okay, for the Rams' purposes, had the Rams gone in there and won, then everybody said, okay, the Rams still the team to beat in the NFC West. So I think what it does is it shows that the NFC West really is wide open between these three teams. I think the way we've all been expecting the Niners to be competitive the last couple of years with the Rams and Seahawks. So it's kind of up to the Niners now whether they really want to show that they're part of that. But they have yet to play a divisional game. I think there's only about four teams in the NFL that have yet to play a divisional game, and the Niners are one of them. But I think the Seahawks, I thought they were going to fall so bad last year. And they became just they're a playoff contender again, right? I mean, I think they have a couple of key pieces. Obviously, Russell Wilson is – I just think he's so underappreciated nationally. I mean, the guy is extremely elusive and a playmaker. You know, you're seeing that tonight with Patrick Mahomes, if his ankle's okay or whatever. But there's that uncanny knack of being able to escape pressure and make a play. Whereas, you know, Jared Goff and the Rams, it's been an offense that was doing so well, but they had a really good offensive line when they're at their peak, and they have a terrible offensive line right now. And that's really putting a lot of strain on that offense. And the defense has not been playing well the last couple of games. So it's when the Niners go down there in a week, you know, next Sunday, it's going to be fascinating to see, because the Niners, they get a lot of fans in the Coliseum. So I think it's going to be really cool to see, like, what's going to happen in the NFC West as long as the Niners take care of business tomorrow night against the Browns.
Cam Inman with us, of course, from the San Jose Mercury News. Cam, what about the Browns do you think should and does concern the 49ers the most? Would it be Myles Garrett?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Myles Garrett and Olivier Vernon, because they can flip-flop sides, and he's very good himself. You know, the Giants paid him a ton of money, and then they shipped him off to Cleveland, just like they did with Odell. But Myles Garrett is he's a big pass rusher that Justin School, who's going to be making his second career start in place of Joe Staley, I don't care who it is. I mean, you probably if Staley was there, he'd probably need help against Myles Garrett, because this guy is a big-time player. And you want to make sure that you are probably neutralizing him the way that the Raiders did Khalil Mack today. So it can be done. And if you give Garoppolo enough time, he can attack a Brown secondary that's going to be full of backups, because they're missing, I think, two or three of their starters, as they have the last couple of games, as the Niners will be. I mean, they're going to be missing Akella Witherspoon, a cornerback, so they're going to be likely starting Emmanuel Mosley for his first time. So I think both teams are going to want to run the ball and not really put it in jeopardy with pass rushers bearing down their quarterback's throats.
Cam, how do you think the 49ers handled the bye week? I know the last couple years it's been in the middle of the year, and Kyle Shanahan's just given everybody the week off. This year he used some of the practice time that he can have, you know, surrounding when he has to give the players their allotted time off. Do you think they're in a good place, or they feel they're in a good place based on how they've handled that week?
I don't really know how to answer it, because anytime people come off the bye, they seem rested. A lot of guys got away, went to, like, their hometown. They're back to their colleges. So you get that mental not only rest, you kind of get rejuvenated, you know, when you go back to your roots, and you kind of can draw from within that. But, you know, they're 0-2 after the bye with Shanahan. So I liked how he added a couple bonus practices in there. These weren't big-time practices. They're, like, hour-long light stretching walkthroughs, I think, almost. So, you know, I think that's good. I mean, it's like, hey, we got to snap back into it. Okay, we got something really good cooking here. Garoppolo stuck around rather than go back to Chicago because he said he wanted to do some more work here and did some work in the office, and I like that. I mean, he hasn't been flawless at all these first three games. He's got to cut down on some mistakes, and he's going to be playing on his first Monday Night Football game You know, he made his starting debut for the Patriots on Sunday Night Football in the 2016 opener for the Pats, and came back and won that. And he came back and won the last game against the Steelers, 2 weeks ago. And that, I think that really kind of won over the fan base again, going, okay, Jimmy's back. Let's get going here.
Cam, did the 49ers get healthier during the bye week? A lot of us assumed they would, but they still have plenty of issues health-wise.
No, they got a lot healthier in terms of the guys that can play are going to be able to play. It looks like Tevin Coleman is going to come back from a 2.5-game absence, be able to play on an ankle, his high ankle sprain from the season opener because he's a month removed from that. And they don't have to put all the workload on. They obviously, Breida and Mostert show that they can carry the load too. Nick Bosa is healthy. That was not on the injury report all week. And I think that's a big bonus. Dee Ford is one that's kind of, people aren't sure what to think about it because he has knee tendonitis. And from everything I've read and understand is the only way to get rid of it outside of he did a procedure 2 months ago. They're not going to do that again. The only way to get through it is rest and proper rehab. And so he did not practice Wednesday, Thursday, went through the Friday walk-through practice. But, you know, he dealt with this all last season and made all 16 starts. And he's not a full-time player. Put him in on third down, passing downs, make sure he knows not that Baker Mayfield can duck and spin around and get out of the pocket, but just go get him. So I wouldn't worry too much about him. And then, you know, the guys that are going to be out are Staley, who's out for a couple more weeks at least with the broken leg, and then Witherspoon, who was supposed to be out a month, but I would not be surprised if he's back in the mix possibly next Sunday against the Rams or even the game after that. So,
oh, wow.
He's getting around really well. So I don't know how much, you know, I think initially it was like a month out, and they said it might be a 1 to 6 week injury. It's the vibe I get from him and just seeing how he's getting around. I think he's going to be way ahead of that. So that's good news because he was playing really well. He was playing the best football of his short career so far. And those were the main injury concerns. Jimmy Ward's coming back, from a finger injury right before the season opener. So he might be in the mix also. He might be starting at free safety, or they might do kind of what they did, I think, at one of those exhibition games where they had Jimmy start at free safety, but then he would shift inside and play some nickel, and they bring Tavarius Moore into play safety. So I'd imagine they're going to mix it up a little bit because they got to come out with something to stop Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry, because those guys are two of the most talented wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, and Emmanuel Moseley will be out there tomorrow night. How else do you think the 49ers are going to make up for not having Witherspoon tomorrow?
Well, yeah, you know, and there's been a lot of talk about Emmanuel Moseley's up for this challenge, that he's, you know, that this guy has answered the bell whenever they need to do. He's not your typical Niners cornerback. They usually like these taller ones that can play more aggressive, but he does play aggressive. He's 5'11", but I like him. You know, as much as they can say he's ready for it, nobody knows. And he's going to be, you know, on a big stage, Monday Night Football, going against the best receivers in the NFL. So I would imagine they're going to have some safety help from him and make sure that the pass rush is getting to Mayfield fast.
Cam, great stuff. As always, we really appreciate it, and I'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay, good deal. Thanks, JD.
All right.
Talk to you later.
All right. Cam Inman.
Yeah.
Bay Area News Group, 95.7 The Game.
He called the Raiders win today.
Wow.
He said he wasn't real confident, but he had the Raiders over the Bears.
That's interesting.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Yeah,
I don't know too many that would have picked that one. Although, again, I'll tell you, I mean, I hadn't really followed the Bears week until this morning, but when I heard they left Thursday night, Friday, or basically got in on Friday to London, I thought, well, they're not going to play well. Like, I thought they still could win the game, but I thought, well, it's not going to be as fluid and smooth as it would be had they been there for the better part of the week.
So are you more concerned about Myles Garrett against Justin Skoull? Are you more concerned about whichever receiver? I think Odell Beckham Jr. is where Emmanuel Moseley is going to start. Yeah,
I think both are big-time concerns. I think Myles Garrett is the number one concern, though, and that's because not only can he wreck a game, but he might wreck your season if he gets
to wreck your soul.
That is overstating it slightly. But if he gets to Jimmy Garoppolo, and you know, because that's the thing. 49ers are playing well, but things change real quick if Jimmy Garoppolo goes out. And you know, we saw that last year. And I know there's a confidence in Nick Mullins, but anytime you're playing a big time pass rusher, the concern is not that it's just going to wreck the game. It's more that there might be some kind of an injury that can really affect your season.
Speaking of injuries that could affect your season, it looks like the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, is limped off the field. We'll get more details when they're available. 1:33 left in the third quarter. The Colts are still leading the Chiefs 13-10.
Yeah. Those Colts. Pesky Colts.
Yeah. That would be a stunning upset, to say the least, even though maybe we should have been paying more attention. Obviously, a long ways to go. I think you and I agree. Well, depending on Patrick Mahomes' status, that the Chiefs will pull this one out. But, you know, the Chiefs barely survived last week against the Lions.
Yeah, they did. And that's a tough game. I think actually playing it in Detroit is tougher than people think.
The Lions are better than people think.
And the Lions have been better than – yeah, exactly. They had the tie the first week and then won a couple of games. And, yeah, so I think that's fair. I mean, that division looks like maybe the best division in football, the NFC North.
By the way, we've talked a lot about that Packers win over the Cowboys. The Cowboys are not happy with the loss. They're also not happy with the fact that Coach Garrett was penalized for unsportsmanlike conduct because he used abusive language towards an official. Apparently it was when the Cowboys were throwing a challenge flag over to Amari Cooper play. Amari Cooper was ruled to have been out of bounds on a pass from Dak Prescott with 4 seconds left in the third quarter, but replays showed he was able to get both feet down, so Garrett had to use his final challenge of the game, and he was upset because he'd lost a challenge on a pass interference earlier. So he was penalized 15 yards for abusive language, and when Jerry Jones was told about that, he said, "Oh, I hope the little darling didn't hear something he hadn't heard before. We should all stop the wheel over that if he got a penalty for abusive language." But you can't swear at the officials.
Yeah, sure you can.
Well, you can, but you're going to get penalized for it.
Yeah, you may. You probably shouldn't, though, honestly. I mean, let's have a little leeway there.
The Cowboys, they've got to be very frustrated right now, right? They're riding high at 3-0. When are they going to give Dak all his money? And now two losses in a row, back-to-back losses against NFC contenders.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
I think the issue is Jason Garrett. I really do. Because the takeaway that I'm left with from today is just how woefully unprepared they were to play this game at home, coming off a loss against another contending team, but a team that wasn't on the radar as a contending team like they were coming into the season. If you've got this great defense, right, and Dak Prescott's worth $40 million, then you need to come out and be ready to freaking play at home against another good team. And they were just woefully unprepared to play. They get down four touchdowns before they even start attempting to make it a game.
They looked like they were playing in London.
It was
they
really
looked like
bad.
They'd taken a plane to London, and it took them a while to wake up.
That was as pathetic a performance as I've seen from a good team this year.
17-0 at halftime, similar in some ways to the playoff game the Packers won at Dallas a couple years ago, just where the Cowboys got off to a dreadful start and never recovered.
Unprepared to play that game, and I know Aaron Rodgers has had a pretty darn good career against the Cowboys. He's had a pretty good career in that stadium as well. He also won the Super Bowl in that stadium, going back to the 2010 season. So he's had some success there. It may just be a little bit of one of those things, but the Cowboys just not being prepared. I mean, that's the kind of game today that makes me think, boy, I don't believe that I could trust the Cowboys in a big game. That's one that I just file away for later if the Cowboys are playing in a playoff-type scenario.
So you like right now, it sounds like the Eagles in the NFC East.
Right now, today, I like the Eagles in the NFC East. I still like the Saints in the South. Green Bay's been my pick since their week one upset of the Bears. I think Green Bay, and I think Green Bay's winning the North. And
remember, Green Bay got their chiclets kicked in by the Eagles
right
a week
but,
ago
but
Thursday.
But the Eagles are good. The Eagles
yeah.
are a good team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad loss by any stretch for the Packers.
No.
I mean, yeah, it wasn't home, but again,
and they had a shot right at the end.
And that's a team that, you know, can rush the passer, can throw the football, and can run the football. And yeah, the Eagles had to come up with a couple of goal line stands at the end to win it. And the NFC West right now, I'd flip a coin. The Rams clearly aren't as good. The Seahawks, I'm not totally sold on.
I think Cam hit on the key issue for the Rams, and that's their offensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of those
and
things
that leads
that
to not
hard.
Being able to run. And
yeah,
then,
and you watch the games, and it's not obvious. Well, why aren't they running the ball? Their offensive line was dominant, and this year it has not been, and that throws off everything they're trying to do offensively based on the run.
Yeah.
They still should have won that game against – well, I hate to say that. They didn't win. They had every chance to win that game against the Seahawks.
Well, you make the – you make the
field, we'd look at them then.
Well, you make the field goal, and then – you make the field goal, you win the game. You're right there. Next week is for first place.
I still think the Rams are better than the Seahawks.
I do too. But I think when you factor in the Niners and they're all three kind of right there, and the Rams and the Niners are going to play next week.
And those pesky Redbirds got their first win today.
It's yeah, I'm not.
What a division.
Although the 49ers, again, haven't. I'm going to say this until they beat them. The 49ers haven't beat them since 2014. So
you know how the 49ers haven't beaten anybody yet, right? I mean, they can only play who's on the schedule, obviously.
Will tomorrow count as beating somebody or not?
Question.
Or not?
That is my question.
Because you could make a case for it.
I know.
Still wouldn't.
I know.
Depending upon your opinion of the Browns.
I think it would depend on how they beat them, right?
Yeah. I don't see a blowout. I really don't.
Because of the bye week? Because of the health issues?
Just because the talent levels are similar. I think the Browns are the more talented team. I think just raw talent on the field, I think the Browns are the more talented team. Now, I think the 49ers are a better coach team. I think Freddie Kitchens is a joke. So, we'll see.
Why are you so hard on for?
So, I think the 49ers have an advantage there. They have an advantage because they're at home. Which team is going to play more buttoned up? That's a coin flip. Because the 49ers have been sloppy and penalty prone and turnover prone, and so have the Browns, actually. So I don't know which team is going to show up and play a cleaner game. I think whoever does will win.
I think the 49ers, if they come out and they get off to a good start, I think they're going to have everything go their way. And, the Browns will make it a close game in the second half. But if the 49ers can come out, which they didn't do against the Steelers, if they can come out and establish from the get-go and play a relatively clean first half, I think they're going to have their way with the Browns.
I'm leaning 49er win, but I do think it's going to be a one-score game with the Browns having a chance to.
Baker Mayfield throwing, intercepted by Richard Sherman.
Possibly.
That seals the deal.
Or even the Browns go down maybe and tie it late, and then the 49ers win it at the end. Something like that. But a close game, I just think the talent, I don't see a blowout either way.
If there is a blowout, I think there's a chance for that. I think it would hinge on the 49ers' ability to wreck Cleveland's passing game by getting to Baker again and again and again.
And that's
I think that's possible.
That is possible. All right. That's gonna do it.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. We're done.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
You bet.
For Whitey Gleason, for the Joes behind the glass. Our thanks to Cam Inman. Our thanks to Neil Cooling for joining us as well. Raiders replay coming up next. Right here on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.